G'day folks, this is Kim Warner from the Green Cards, and you're listening to a guy who claims to be Steve Martin on Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass.
I am very happy to welcome to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass a member of an excellent, excellent band, the Green Cards, just recently nominated for Best Folk Album of the Year for a Grammy, and I have on the phone right now, if we pushed all the correct buttons, Kim Warner.
I'm here. You did it right, Steve. How are you, mate?
Doing good, man. Gosh, it's so nice for you to be available. I know it's a hectic time for the Green Cards. I will tell you on the air that I've been a fan since forever. I've seen the band, not only we mentioned a little bit before the air about IBM, I've seen you in concert and I've seen you in different settings, and always a very unique approach to everything that the Green Cards do, and just great, great musicianship. I'm pulled toward musicianship and originality, and I think you guys do it all. And let's just say congratulations right away for the Grammy nomination for Sweetheart and Son. What a great thing.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was a real surprise. Independent band, and we just sort of, I think we thought we might kiss those things goodbye or any opportunity for that. But yeah, it was a huge surprise and a great thrill. And you know, the category Best Folk Album, which is, wow, it's just such a big one. And to be in there with some great friends, Sarah Giroux and the Milk Carton Kids and the great, great Guy Clark, and another great record, which I really do need to listen to in there. But yeah, man, life is good. It's a good time.
You're still wake up every once in a while and go,
I did the next morning. Well, I woke up with a hangover the next morning, but still pretty amazing, you know. And it's really cool because we have like about 6 weeks to the awards themselves, so it's just a really exciting time, you know. It's just every day, just really looking forward to it. So yeah, man, things are great.
That's why I was so glad to be able to get you. I bet you that your social calendar is picking up a little bit.
It's picked up this week. Yeah, it has. People are coming out of the woodwork. And to be honest, when we toured pretty strong right up until, you know, the sort of mid to late November anyway. So this is always a good time to catch up with friends here, and an extra special way to catch up with them right now as well. So, yeah, fantastic. Well,
even though Kim and I are on Skype, you're in the continent. You're out in Texas, right?
I am. I'm in Austin, Texas right now.
You're an Aussie in Austin.
Yes, sir. An Aussie in Austin, exactly, yeah. And there's quite a few of them here, actually.
Well, that's good. It's a great place for music, and I think that the Green Cards, it fits in that whole climate of just kind of, you know, let's do different things. And I think Austin's a great place for you guys to be hanging out.
Yeah, definitely. It really is. I mean, we formed down here in Austin nearly 12 years ago now. And it's a real, like you said, original music and people that play stuff that's different. And people in Austin really support that. The music community here really want to hear stuff that's different, and they want to see people having a go and doing something unique. And certainly is a great, great music town.
Now, I know, and I will tell you, I followed the band since I remember the first time I saw you, and I know it was probably in that time frame when you were just starting to tour. And but a lot of people who listen to this program may not get it, so let's do the customary, do a little rundown of the Green Cards and
sure. You know,
together and what the music is about. Then we'll talk about what you're doing right now.
Yeah, well, we formed back in 2002 here in Austin, started playing, like everyone does. We got one show a week, and it was in an Irish pub that's no longer here called Mother Egan's Irish Pub. We played there 12 till 3, I think, on a Sunday. Then we got another gig at an Irish pub also on a Sunday, which was 9 till 1 at night. So we were a Sunday band, and then a few more gigs. And before too long, we started branching out, and the occasional festival and thing came in. And then we made a record, and that's sort of been it. We just finished our sixth record and toured all over the U.S. and Australia and Europe, and still going really strong, and very, very thankful that I haven't had to have a day job in all that time.
That's the key.
Is the key, yeah.
I think that I saw you guys when I think from about the beginning. I don't know how I ran across you, but I do remember talking to you either at IBMA or somewhere where you were just about to or just had toured with Bob Dylan. I think just happened.
Yeah.
What was that?
It was amazing. That was 2005, so it's some time ago. I think looking at when IBMA lands every year, it probably was just right off the back of that tour. Yeah. And that was a huge, huge deal for the band. I mean, just to get to see Bob Dylan, and it was Willie Nelson as well, just to see them every night, you know, it was incredible. And I always say the thing that I think we got most out of that, other than the exposure, was realizing – and understanding how to put on a show. Because if you've seen Dylan and if you've seen Willie, they're two completely different shows. You know, Willie Nelson will come out. He's going to open with Whiskey River. He's going to play every song, Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain, Crazy, every hit he's ever had. He's kissing babies. He's waving to the crowd, you know, engaging the audience the whole time, and closes with On the Road Again and Thank You Very Much, Good Night. And then Dylan comes out and he says nothing for the whole show. He plays two songs he played the night before, which are unrecognizable, and then comes out and thanks his band, the only thing he says. And it's still an amazing, amazing, amazing show. It just goes to show there's no set way of doing anything, is it? You just do it yourself. So that was really good validation.
So what the green cards do is somewhere in between those two.
Somewhat in between, yeah. We haven't quite had the hits that either of them have had, so we better just put on a consistent show. But no, it was a really good learning curve for the band, for sure, especially playing to that many people. It was a minor league baseball stadium tour. So we went from playing little clubs and the occasional small little festival to playing to, you know, 10 plus thousand people every day. And it's amazing.
Well, let's tell the audience, first of all, who all's in the band. We'll start with you, of course, and what you play, and then let's talk about the rest of the members. And I have another question for you after that.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm Kim Warner. I play the mandolin and the mandola and bouzouki, and sing harmonies and the squawk out an occasional lead. And Carol Young, who's been with me from day one, is the lead singer and plays the bass. And got a girl called Kristen Weber playing the violin with us right now. And Carl Miner has been playing guitar with us for the last 4 years. So that's the group.
And you play, there's a lot of stuff on YouTube. We were, just for the people listening in, I was a bit late getting to this, and I called Kim on my cell phone, and I said, hey, I'm going to get there right away. Well,
why? Not my dog.
I have a dog too, but she didn't hear that, so she's not reacting to it. But that was well timed. So I called him just to say that, you know, there's all kinds of stuff on YouTube with the green cards. As a matter of fact, you have official videos, but I've seen you really leaning in heavily into a mandolin right into that bluegrass arena. So I somewhere you got some chops, not just a chop on a mandolin. Somewhere you got some mandolin playing credentials behind you.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. going back to being a kid in South Australia, my father, Trove Warner, is a bluegrass country rockabilly musician, and so he was always had the music around, and he didn't really have a mandolin at one stage, but I started playing violin, and then he bought me a mandolin. So I guess I just learned some fiddle tunes and things from my dad initially, and that was just what I was doing for a while, and didn't take it too serious. But I guess the thing for me is when I first heard Sam Bush and Newgrass Revival, that was when the light went on, and I thought, oh wow, you're allowed to try that on the mandolin. And that really got me into it, because as much as I love traditional bluegrass music, that style of playing never really grasped me, you know, the Monroe style, which I appreciate very much, but it's not the style that I wanted to play. And then when I heard Sam, and then, you know, later people like Adam Steffi and Chris Thiele, that sort of just changed everything and made me realize that, you know, it's a mandolin, but it can be whatever you want it to be. You know, it's just an instrument. It's the way you express yourself. So, yeah. So.
Two things could happen when you're a new mandolin player and you see Sam Bush. Two things could happen: a light could go on, or a light could go off.
I've spoken to many people where it's gone off too.
What did they say? Okay, well, that was interesting.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's not. Yeah, exactly. No, he's amazing, great man. He's been really good to our band as well, and sure is an inspiring musician every time I see him.
Well, listen, I love the green cards, but why, and I want the audience to understand, first of all, I want to talk a little bit about Australia when we're done with here, because I have had an interview with an Australian band, the Stetson family, Nadine Budge, nice little band, and I talked to them about why is there so much bluegrass in Australia. We'll get to that in a minute, but I'm curious about why is it that, I understand it a little bit with the instrumentation, but I see the green cards at things like IBMA, and I see you around bluegrass type festivals. What is the connection, do you think, that is an automatic draw for you there?
I don't know. It's a good question, because when we started playing and when we started forging our sound a little bit, I mean, initially when the band played the first shows we ever did, we were just a cover band. We didn't have any songs. We were playing, you know, Flat and Scruggs things, and then, you know, more Americana things like Steve Earle, Tim O'Brien, things like that. So, we were a little concerned first that we're playing a very American form of music and there were a bunch of foreigners, and I thought that would be work against us. But people really, I don't know, I guess they dug it. They were like, wow, these people are from the other side of the planet and here they are singing, you know, Cabin in Caroline and things like that. So, but I think we started getting hired to come and play festivals, I think, because we were a little different, and a lot of festivals wanted to branch out a little bit, maybe try and bring in a younger crowd as well, and something that was just a little left field than just the straight up style of bluegrass that a lot of the bands were playing. So I think that's what happened, and I'm fortunate that I'm from Australia, that people generally tend to really love Australia and are fascinated with Australia, Americans in particular. Nearly everybody I meet says, oh, I've always wanted to go to Australia. So I think that worked in our favor. And people were just sort of intrigued by how can these foreigners play this music. And then I guess they hear us and they figure that we can play and sing a little bit. So so far, so good. We've had 12 years and it doesn't look like stopping.
Well, Kim, I mean, listen, there could be some novelty to what you're saying, but if you don't deliver the goods on stage, you don't get the fish in that anymore. I mean,
I guess that's true. Yeah.
You guys deliver on stage and your recordings are just excellent. I love this new Sweetheart of the Sun. Before we talk about that though, I do want to talk about music in Australia. Now this was fascinating to me, and you're just going to bear with my own curiosity on this thing, is there is a lot of acoustic music in Australia. There's a lot of bluegrass there. Obviously you had some exposure to it. I want to know what your opinion is to why it's located so well there.
Yeah. I think there's been a few instances of artists that have done well and have had a strong tie to, let's just say, you know, roots American music. I think Casey Chambers has been a really good example, if you're familiar with her music. She's been a big pop star in Australia and done really well here too. And, you know, she's always had a really roots influence. In fact, her father and my dad grew up playing music together and still play together today. Mm-hmm. So they're often to blame, those two, for what happened to their kids. But, you know, so artists like Casey and Paul Kelly, who, again, is another Australian artist and a really iconic big pop artist, but loves traditional and roots in American music, and they both bring that influence back. And then the young audiences and young kids get to hear about you know, Ralph Stanley and things like that, Steve Earle, and then they sort of follow that up. But there's certainly a movement in recent times of young kids playing it. There's some young kids that are really good players in Australia that are playing bluegrass music, and I guess just the, you know, a whole sort of like a domino effect has happened, where because there's people playing, all of a sudden there's some venues that are going to expose this music, and there's some places to play.
There's a festival. There are festivals now that pop up, right?
There are. There are numerous festivals in Australia. Some of them bigger than others, but it seems like there's a festival every month or two where it's pretty much a bluegrass festival, and they get a few American acts to go down from time to time, and it's always really exciting. And yeah, it's a good time. I think, you know, it still goes back to the success that Nickel Creek had and Alison Krauss has had, and then things like Oh Brother Where Art Thou when that movie came out. That just, the exposure that that gave just turned so many people on to, you know, an acoustic form of music, predominantly bluegrass, I guess, old-time music or bluegrass. So that exposure that happened, and a bunch of people went out and bought banjos and mandolins. And
love them, Captain.
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever there's a movie, like, and I'm older than you, but I can tell you this, and I've played banjo for a long, long time, but when Deliverance came out,
yeah,
a lot of banjos were sold. And then, like,
right,
wait 6 months, and the used in the newspaper, they were all being sold back again by those people. I thought, well, this isn't nearly as much fun as it sounds like it's going to be. So.
And I think that's where George Gruen had so much success, the famous instrument store owner. He got on the back end of a folk movement to buy all the instruments before it came back in again, you know. Yeah. It's funny you should mention movies like that, because Bonnie and Clyde, which featured the Flat and Scruggs Foggy Mountain Breakdown.
That's what did it for me.
That's what did it for my dad too. He was literally in a record store wanting to buy, you know, Elvis Presley or Buddy Holly records, like he was listening to, and he heard that and he was like, what's that? And he went and bought the record and bought a banjo, and the rest was history.
I left that movie and my buddies, we'd walked up to the local theater, and they were talking about how many times they got shot in the end. And I kept thinking, what is that? But what is that sound?
What is
that sound driving? I couldn't imagine a human being could make that sound.
That's, you're not the only one. That's just such a common story. So many people, Earl Scruggs turned so many people onto the banjo by them hearing it on that movie. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, let's talk about the new album, this, which is Grammy nominated, great, great album, The Sweetheart of the Sun. Talk a little bit about that, what your sound is on that, and how it differs or not differs from previous recordings.
Yeah, I think it differs in a few ways. First thing is that we decided we wanted to write an album as a whole and not just sort of a collection of songs and put them together and see what would become cohesive. We set out with a plan in mind, and Carol actually came up with an idea to do a themed record, and which this is. It's a themed record based around water and travel, motion, just all the things that really are our life and that we've been around so much, particularly being Australian, I guess. But we sat down with a theme in mind, and it was a challenging way to write a record, but also it was a really focused way to write a record. And you've heard it, so you'll know that there are little bits, instrumental bits that tie songs in together that sort of continue the path and the journey. So the writing side of it was really fun. We had people come down to Austin and write. We had writing retreats on the weekends, and it was a really great way to do it. But I think a big part of it, the big glue, was to get Gary Pechoza to produce it, who is no stranger to great, great acoustic records. I already mentioned Allison and Nickel Creek earlier, that Gary has sort of engineered, recorded all those records. Exactly, John Prine, the Sarah DeRose records are so stunningly good. So Gary's amazing, but we had him produce the record for the first time ever producing us, but we've worked with him before, and he just brings so much. We just knew that for what we were going for, the sound of the record and the sonic scape of the record, that we needed Gary. And we spoke a little bit off air here before about it being a more mellow record than the past records of the Green Cards, and that was true. With the last two records, we really were pushing to try and get more of a live sound in our recordings. We wanted to capture that live energy, but on Sweetheart of the Sun, it wasn't the case. We really wanted to use the studio as a tool, and we wanted to set the mood from start to finish of this record. And writing really up tempo music wasn't the way to go about it. There is up tempo things on there, but
And there's beautiful instrumentals, and it's, you were mentioning the little transitional part. There's like, I was listening to it for the first time, and I thought, oh wait, did something skip? There's a 40-second cut.
Yeah.
That goes from one piece to another.
And, right.
It all molds together that way.
It does. It's a record that really needs to be listened to from start to finish if you have the time, because it was written that way. It was recorded that way. And those things aren't by accident. It was a really fun way to make, we needed to come up with something different for ourselves, if not anything else, to make this recording. And because we're always trying to challenge ourselves as a band, which we're always, trying to challenge, still keeping who we are, but recreating all the time. So I feel good about it.
Oh, it's great. And it's almost, this word doesn't do justice, but if we're talking about a more stark acoustic sound, when, because you always have the electric bass, but this is almost a plush sound.
Yeah, no, true. That's a good word. It's a good word. We wanted it more sleek and plush. That's good. I'm happy with that.
I love the whole album, but the one that I keep, because I'm really into instruments, not that I hate singers, but Paddle of the Torrens to me is just a really cool sweeping tune. I really like that a lot.
Well, thank you. My friend Jed Hughes and I wrote that tune together, and it's certainly become a fan favorite. We play it every show, and it's just a feel good piece of music. I think that it's fun to play. It feels good to play to, feels good to listen to, and certainly has been a favorite for a lot of people on the record.
Well, I'm glad that I wasn't an oddity. I just thought that strikes me just fine, but apparently I have the same taste as a lot of other really smart people.
They do. They're all smart people, I can assure you, too.
And about the people who did the Grammy nomination, I'm so excited. When I see things like this, I just think, yeah, this is great. And I know that you're real busy right now and just dealing with all the publicity that's attendant to such a nomination, but you just got to be flying high. The band just must be like, every time you see each other, you're like, this really...
Yeah, it's pretty. It is. It really is an amazing thing. It's just, it's our third nomination now, and the first time I couldn't believe it, and the second time I was probably even more shocked. It was like, wow, we did it again, and this time to get it in like folk album category, not to, be down upon what we've achieved in the past, but that's just such a big category and something that I feel really strongly that we are a part of is folk music. I've always felt we were under the folk umbrella, and it's really, really special for us.
I forget the quote, and I'm going to say it anyway without attribution. Great, might have been a great jazz player, but all music is folk music.
Yeah, someone told me that the other day too. Yep. I can't remember
I'm going to look it up when we're done here, because I thought I know who said it because I've used it before, but now I can't think of who it was. But yeah.
I had another friend the other day that said, folk, well, folk, I don't know if it's a folk record, but I guess it's all folk music. And he said there was a famous black blues guy that said, it's all folk music. I never heard no animals singing.
Well, that might be part of what I was thinking. Remember the animal part. Oh, man. So right now you're kind of in a little bit of a hiatus now, or are you finished touring for a while?
Yeah, we are. We take pretty much December and January off every year just to sort of recuperate and just be humans. And also, it's just too cold touring in the winter. It's not for us, not for us Australians. So we enjoy taking time off and just hanging with friends in Austin and then just sort of really, I guess, just preparing for the next touring year, starting to sort of, you know, come up with a few new things for the show. And this is a crazy time to start booking for early next year anyway. So it never really stops. It's a, you know, it's a business among anything else. It never stops. But as far as touring, we pull the pin for a couple of months every year. That's the time to do it now. Yeah.
It's good to take a break and kind of get, you know, get back within yourselves and kind of reevaluate. Now you've had the Sweetheart of the Sun is really doing well and getting a lot of attention. And then I don't know, when do you start thinking about the next project?
Yeah, I'm not thinking about it yet.
Okay.
You almost have to, but you know, the album was released in late August, and then we got 3 months of touring there, and then we'll, you know, next year we'll very much be touring off this record, but it'll be sort of more the back half of 2014 before we start looking at what might be the next thing. Yeah,
and then the next one will come out Grammy Award winning. Nominated, the next one will have that little sticker on it from the green cards.
We'll see. I won't get too far ahead of ourselves. I'm not sure it's going to happen. I'm just thrilled to be there. It's going to be it's an awesome thing. It's a great thing.
It's so exciting. I mean, when I used to see you, like when I saw you at IBMA, probably at least I think it was twice that I saw you. I don't remember. But I've seen you so many times, but you know, you would come off the stage and I just really dig the music. I really do. And I always go over to the table and it would be kind of like, I could talk to you guys as much as I wanted to, because, you know, it was just like me and the green cards.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's amazing. It's such a, down home sort of situation, but, you know,
it's not going to happen that way anymore with a big Grammy.
This was some time ago, I think. And
yes, it was.
The point I'm making is it was some
time ago. I could just go sit and I could probably set your table and just like sell stuff.
You're welcome to anytime.
Not anymore. Now you're. This is great. I just get such a contact high from talking. I told you before we went on the air that. Delamay, I like Delamay. Kimber Ludeker's been on this show in your spot.
Yeah.
And the morning after, and I read that on a Friday night, I think it was, and I thought, I'll bet you they had no expectations this was going to happen. So I thought, should I call Kimber or not? And I mean, I think they'd been up all night. I just wanted to be near that new reaction as much as I could. I glommed their excitement just because I needed to.
It's a pretty exciting thing. Now, those girls have done really well, and I wasn't surprised at all that they got a nomination. They've had a really great year, and you know, they're really good, and they're good friends of ours, so we'll look forward to catching up with them among many others out in LA in a few weeks. It'll be a good time.
I was lucky enough to be asked by the people that run Grey Fox to come up and broadcast this year, and I actually spent 2 days in 98 degree weather broadcasting, and I had known of Delamay before then, but I'll just tell you this about their attraction. So I'm glad that you know them and like them. You know, they would go into the merchandise tent. The line was forever.
Yeah.
Forever to get to them. Not just, you know, young ladies who, by the way, knew every word of the songs, even though they only had one record out. But I'm so thrilled for them, and just like for you guys also. I just think this is such a cool thing. I'm ecstatic. I hope you guys are enjoy every sandwich, as Warren Zevon would say.
Absolutely. No, we're thrilled. And, you know, we got the great thing about this music community, we've got so many other friends out there that we're extremely proud of and thrilled for as well. You know, we've been, it's funny, this is our second nomination together with Sarah Giroux. So that's awesome. We've been friends for a long time. So as I say, it's the stuff, you just have to treat it like it doesn't come around very often at all, if ever again. And we're certainly going to make the most of it.
Oh, man. Listen, So right now, do you have plans to appear anywhere? Is there any place you want to talk about where you're going to be right now, or right now you're just in that hiatus mode?
Yeah, to be honest, right, this is just sort of the calm before the storm again. We're just figuring out where we're going to be. And the next thing, I guess, is we're going down to Australia in March, which I'm really excited about. We're just finalizing some dates down there. We're going to be down there playing a couple of festivals, it looks like. So that's really exciting. And, you know, we're just... Yeah, it sort of take a couple of weeks to recuperate a little bit. But as I say that, Carol's in the other room and, you know, liaising with booking agents and so forth. So things are rolling in all the time. So
well, let's tell everybody about your website. I bet you got one.
Yeah, thegreencards.com. That's where you can find everything out. Or we've got Facebook as well. Mm-hmm. And we're always pretty active on that stuff and Twitter. And we'll let everybody know what we're up to. But, yeah, it's just really, you know, kind of nice to wind down a little bit. We've got plenty of friends here in Austin and just sort of spend the holidays here and then kick it off in the new year again.
Oh, sounds great. That sounds great. How long have you lived in Austin? I forgot.
You know what? This is our second time living here, Steve. We've lived in Nashville for the last 6 years or so. We've been back in Austin for nearly 2 years now and lived in Austin at the start of our time here in the US. So this is second trip back in Austin and really, really great to be back. I love it down here.
And you probably don't know the answer to this off the top of your head, but what's the date of the Grammy Awards?
I do know. It's the 26th of January.
That was a free one.
And we will be there.
All right. I bet you will. All right. We will. Listen, thanks so much for taking the time out of the day. I'm thrilled to get a chance to talk to you, and I know the audience here is going to pick up a lot from this. I mean, I dig your music, and congratulations to the whole band.
Much pleasure for us. Thank you very much for the support, right. And great talking to you, and we'll do it again down the line.
Don't be a stranger, bud.
All right, mate.
I'll see you again.
Bye-bye.